Okay, morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Ayin Gimel. We are starting today on Ayin Beis Amud Beis. We are talking about the road, Dave. The Mishnah told us yesterday on Ayin Beis Amud Aleph that someone who comes tunneling into your home, so you have a right to defend yourself, and you can assume that he is coming to kill you. The Gemara explains step by step how he knows that you're not going to just watch somebody take your money. He knows that you're going to stand by and defend himself, and defend you and your house and your money. He therefore has already made the decision that he's going to kill you. He therefore qualifies as a rodef. You now have the ability to defend yourself. And so the Gemara says, based on that, that was Rava's explanation in the Mishnah. And based on that, when someone comes into your house, so you have the right to kill him. There was a discussion in yesterday's daf regarding his financial liability, meaning now that he's chayv misa, so we know based on the principle of kimle b'derabimine that when a person is chayv misa, he's not also going to be chayv mamon as well. So is he going to be financially off the hook? So the answer clearly is that while in the house, the answer is yes. What if he leaves the house? What if he takes an item with him after he leaves the house? So Rav had a position in yesterday's daf where even after he leaves the house, he still doesn't have to reimburse you. Rava disagrees. And despite the fact that Rava disagreed, we ended that part of the discussion yesterday with an incident where Rava was actually the victim of a crime. Somebody tunneled into his house and took away his rams. And then the thieves came back and tried to return the rams to Rav. And Rava said, look, Rav says that they're yours, they're not mine. And therefore, I'm not going to take them. And we dealt with the fact that that seems to be an interesting, strange psak by Rava. Tosus already grappled with it. We discussed that yesterday. We talked yesterday about what the default setting is when someone comes into your house. And we noted that, steer in the psukim in terms of what the default setting should be. Do you kill the person or do you not kill the person? On a default setting, so the Gemara says that the default setting is generally speaking that you do kill the person who comes tunneling into your home. And the only time that the default setting changes is only when it's a father. When your father comes tunneling into your home, so we generally assume that your father's hardwired where he's not going to kill you. And so therefore your default setting is unless you know otherwise, so you don't kill your father tunneling in. And the Gemara then pointed out that Rav made a statement that he would kill anybody who's going to come into his house, with one exception, Rav Chanina Bar Shila, because they had the kind of relationship where he knows that Rav Chanina Bar Shila, under any circumstances, would not be killing Rav. So basically, it's not just a father, but basically, it would be anybody who you know has such a rachmanus for you that he will not kill you. All that stated, that was just a quick recap of what we did yesterday. We also mentioned the halachas of not only can you, the homeowner, kill the person coming in, but somebody else can kill him as well. That we learned from the pasuk of Vuhuka. And not only that, but even though he's technically chayef saif, in other words, he's a murderer, at least he's a projected murderer, so he should be chayef saif, but the Gemara pointed out yesterday that you can kill him in any which manner available. Okay, we are now Tana Rabbanan, halfway down on Ayin Beis Amud Beis, and this is the conclusion of yesterday's daf, and the Gemara now quotes the pasuk, Mach Teres, Ein Li Ela Mach Teres. So I know that if he tunnels into your home, so then you have the right to kill him, because that's the way the Torah describes it. However, Gago, Chatzero, Karfifo, Minayin, how about if he's coming into some of your other properties? Let's say he's going into your roof. Now, roof, generally speaking, is the second floor, but it could also mean roof as well. And Rashi over here describes, meaning he just basically puts a ladder out right by your roof, and he climbs on the ladder and goes into your roof. So he's not physically tunneling into your house. Do we have the same ability to defend yourself, defend your home, kill him? Or what if he goes into your backyard or into your courtyard? So the Gemara wants to know, how do I know, the Braisa wants to know, how do I know that these people are also going to be included in the parsha of Habab and Machteris, and you have the right to kill him? Tamalomer Yimatzei HaGanav Mikom Makom. The Torah says Yimatzei HaGanav, he's found. Meaning it doesn't matter how he gets to your property. Once he's on your property, so now you have the license to kill him. Imke matamalama machteris. So why does the Torah describe it as machteris? Him tunneling into your house. Because the Torah is describing what's going to happen most of the time. But it doesn't matter how he comes onto your property. As long as he's on your property, so and he's uninvited, so you have the right to kill him. I'll point out, by the way, again, Allah lamaisa, like I said yesterday, Allah lamaisa, this was life and death. You know, obviously this requires, you know, great people to give psak over here, but I'll just share with you a Rashi. It's a very interesting Rashi. At least I thought it was interesting. Rashi says Chatzir v'karfifo, Rashi says, "Nichnas bo derech ha-pesach shematzu pasuach minayin." Even if the door was open, but he was uninvited. So Rashi says that also falls under the category of a machteris. Okay. It's, yeah, I know. I also thought that Rashi to be interesting. Okay, Tanya Yidach, the Gemara quotes another Braisa. Machteris ein li'ela machteris gago chatzir v'karfifo minayin. So again, the Braisa here is grappling with the same question that the previous Braisa was dealing with. And that is, how do I know that it also comes to include where he comes onto your roof or your courtyard or your backyard? So Tamalamar, Yimatzeh, I got to make a makom. Imke matamalamar machteris. Same question that we asked in the previous Braisa. Why does the Torah say machteris? Machteris is zui asraso. Because by him tunneling in, that's equivalent to a warning. Meaning that you don't have to warn him. In fact, you could just kill him without a warning. Since he's going through the trouble of tunneling, so that is a clear indication of what his intentions are. You don't have to warn him because you know exactly what his intentions are, and therefore you can kill him. And that now brings us to the last part of yesterday's daf, and that is, does a machteres, need a warning? So we just learned together in the Braisa, the answer is no. He does not need a warning. So if he does not need a warning, what if it's somebody who simply doesn't even understand the warning? So for example, a katan. Let's say the person who is challenging your life, who's threatening your life, is a minor. So with a minor, it's not that you don't give him a warning, you can't give him a warning. Meaning he does not simply have the cognitive ability to understand what that warning would mean. And would I be allowed to kill the katan if the katan's threatening my life? Would I be allowed to give the katan considering the fact that there's simply no ability to give him a warning? Amar Rav Huna, katan arodif nitan lasila benafsho. So Rav Huna says that if a katan is pursuing you and he's going to kill you, so you now have the right to defend yourself and kill him, despite the fact that you can't give him a warning. And what Rav Huna is really doing is producing for us a chiddush, a tremendous chiddush, which is that the rodif does not require a warning. And not only does not require a warning, meaning even if it's not possible to warn him, because in this particular case, he's a minor. He doesn't understand what you're saying to him. As long as he's threatening your life, you have the right to defend yourself and kill him. Eitz Rav Chisla Rav Huna, so the Gemara challenges now based on a Mishnah Olos. And the Mishnah in Olos describes the following. Now, Rashi points out it really is important here to know the first part of the Mishnah, which the Gemara does not quote. But I'm now looking at Rashi. Rashi Divrei Maskil Yatzar Rosho. B'isha Mekashe Leilet Musikenes. So first of all, contextually, what we're talking about is a woman who is right now in childbirth, and she's really struggling with the childbirth, and the emerging child is threatening her life. Says the Mishnah over there. Now I'm reading Rashi because really what I'm doing right now is I'm reading the first half of the Mishnah. The Ketani Reisha Achaya Poshet Yada V'Chotchato O Mutziaso Le'Evarim. So the first part of the Mishnah describes where the fetus is not yet emerging. The fetus is in utero, but right now currently the fetus is threatening the mother's life. So the Mishnah says very clearly what you're allowed to do is that the midwife is allowed to go into the uterus, cut the fetus up, and extract the fetus limb by limb in order to save the mother's life. Now, that's the first part of the Mishnah. Now, I'm going to reserve the rest of the Rashi for just a moment. The rest of the Rashi is really important, and we're going to get to that rest of the Rashi in just a second. But now we're going to go to the Gemara, because the Gemara now is quoting the second half of that Mishnah. Yatzar Rosho, once the head of that baby emerges. And now, even though that baby is threatening the mother's life, ain nogin bo. Now you cannot touch the baby. Now touch the baby, meaning you cannot kill the baby. And even though that means that the mother's life is going to be lost, once the head has emerged, now that baby is considered a life. I did give away that Rashi. I didn't want to do that, but I did. Okay. Ain nogin bo. Lefisha ain dochin nefesh mibnei nefesh. Because we have a general rule, and that is that you cannot sacrifice one life for another life. So in other words, there's no way to gauge which life is more valuable. And so you have to...
You're doing that with a rodent.
Huh?
You're doing that with a rodent.
That's exactly the Gemara's question. That's exactly the Gemara's question. V'yamai rodev hu. So the Gemara now is bothered by the fact that the child that's emerging is considered a rodev. And by a rodev, we're killing the rodev in order to save somebody's life. So over here, why are we killing the child in order to save the mother's life? Shani Hasan de Mishamaika Radfila. So the Gemara says it's different over here because this is not the child presenting himself as a rode, but rather this is Shamaya. This is coming from heaven. The way the Rambam writes it, or the way he describes this portion of the Mishnah or the Gemara, is that this is natural. In other words, this is not the baby acting as a rodev. This is called natural childbirth. This is what happens on any given childbirth, where the baby is going to be posing a risk to the mother as it's emerging, and therefore the emerging baby is not a rodev. Okay, I'm going to do this really quickly and not thoroughly. Isn't that what a great way to promote this? Quickly and not thoroughly. And it's something I'm saying that only because I know this is something that deserves something not quick and something that deserves a lot of thorough attention. But I will just simply I'll make you aware of the basics, and that is there clearly is a difference between a termination of a fetus in utero versus once the head emerges, now the baby's considered born, and therefore you cannot take the baby's life in defense of the mother's life. And if the mother's going to die, so unfortunately, that's going to be the conclusion. What's the difference between the baby in utero and the baby after it emerges? So here, I'm just going to present Rashi today. I'm make everyone aware that the Rambam has a different viewpoint of this issue, and it's really important to know that, and it's really important to look up the Rambam. And so on your own, you're gonna look up the Rambam for more work. The Rambam, by the way, is in Hilchos Ratzeach. It is the first parak of Hilchos Ratzeach, Halacha Tes, Aleph Tes in Hilchos Ratzeach. You look up the Rambam. In the meantime, however, I'm just going to cite Rashi. Rashi says over here, what's the difference between the fetus in utero and the fetus after emerges? Decholzman, now I'm going back to the Rashi, and now I'm picking up in the Rashi where I left off. Decholzman shelo yatzo la'avir olam lav nefeshu. Rashi writes that when the fetus, before it emerges from the mother, it is not considered a nefesh. V'nitin lahargo latzilasimo. And therefore, that's what allows me to kill it in order to save the mother's life. Aval yatzo roshe no gimbo. But once its head emerges, so then you can't kill it. Largo da'avalei kilud, because now it's considered born. Bein doch nefesh mimnei nefesh. Now, mind you, by the way, even within Rashi, Rashi says that the only way that you can terminate the fetus is only when it's threatening the mother's life. Yes, it's true. Rashi says that the fetus inside is not considered a nefesh, but that doesn't mean, even according to Rashi, that you could just simply terminate that fetus. It just means that now, given the choice between the fetus and the mother, so now you could choose the mother over the fetus because the fetus does not qualify as a nefesh. But certainly, even according to Rashi, that doesn't allow for the termination of the fetus. Now, obviously, this leads to questions like abortion, etc., etc. And that's why I say this is a big topic. It is it's a really expansive topic. It's really important, obviously. And even to have an intelligent conversation on this topic, so again, you have to look up the Rambam, like I cited, even though I'm not quoting it this morning, and you have to know a slew of other things. But this is just the beginning of the discussion. The next part of Rashi also, by the way, is really interesting and really important. I'm going to read the next part of Rashi as well. V'intomer ma'isa d'sheva ben b'chri. So, towards the end of Shmuel Beis, so there was a personality in Tanakh, his name was Sheva ben b'chri. And he was looking, and he went into a city in order to sing sanctuary in the city, and he was a mord b'malchus, he rebelled against the king, he rebelled against David HaMelech. And so what happened was is that David's soldiers were outside the city and looking for extradition of Sheva ben Bichri from the city. And Rashi goes on now to cite that basically, based on what we just learned in the Gemara, we're going to deal with a simple problem. I'm reading the Rashi. So basically what happened was is that the soldiers of David said to the members of that city, your choice is really simple. You either give us Sheva ben Bichri, or we're going to kill everyone here in the city. And so given that choice, so what do? So they decapitated Sheva ben Bichri and they threw his head outside the city. Problem solved. Now problem solved, but Rashi now points out, but we just learned in our Gemara, Ein doch nefesh mimnei nefesh. You can't sacrifice one life for other lives. And by the way, it's very interesting because here, it's one life for many lives. But Rashi's assuming it doesn't matter. In other words, it doesn't matter if it's one, two, or whatever it is, you cannot sacrifice one for another. Hasam, mishum de yafil lo masru lo hayanerag be'ir kishit pasenu yoav, vehein neragin imo. So Rashi has two solutions why over there it was acceptable for them to kill Sheva ben Bichri and throw his head outside the city. One, says Rashi, is because there it wasn't a choice of one life over another life. Because over there, had they not handed over Sheva ben Bichri, they all would have been killed, including Sheva ben Bichri. So therefore, it's not one for another. Additionally, Rashi points out, I'm sorry, before I get to the additional. Aval im haya hu nitzal afa pi she'ein ha'ragin, lo yirishan lemosra kedei lahatzel atzman. Rashi clearly articulates that if it really was a choice where either they're going to have to give up their lives or kill Sheva ben Bichri, so they don't have the option then to have killed Sheva ben Bichri had it been one for another. Or in this case, one for many. Okay. Next part of Rashi, Inami, Mishum Demar B'machas Havavach Mefarsh Lebetosefta. So, or alternatively, what you could say is that Sheva ben Bichri was a Mord B'machas, he rebelled against the king, which means that he himself was Chayv Misa, and so like, right, correct. It's like he was dead already, and that's what gave him the right to kill him. Anyway, really a lot of interesting discussions in the course of these just very short lines of Gemara regarding termination of a fetus, termination of the fetus once it starts emerging, which is it's no longer a fetus, it's now a baby, not sacrificing one for another, the episode of Sheva ben Bichri, what justified the city to kill Sheva ben Bichri, obviously a lot of really important life and death matters in these short pieces of Gemara.
Why is Hasra being discussed here
with Rode? Why? Because
there's no Beit Din here. This is a time sensitive.
Right, correct, correct. You might have thought, in other words, the consideration would have been that prior to you killing him, you have to tell him, look, you take one step further, and I have to kill you. And now what Rav Huna is teaching us is that's not necessary. And Rav Huna is going even one step further. Not only is it not necessary, even if it's unavailable, meaning Hasra just simply is ineffective in that, let's say he's a katan, he's a minor, still, you have the right to defend yourself. Meaning you might have thought that the only way you could defend yourself is only with a warning, with an introductory comment of, you can't take another step, otherwise I'm going to have to kill you. Neima misayele. The Gemara now is going to support Rav Huna based on the following brisa. Rodesh rodifach chaver lahargo. Amar lo reishi yisrael hu ben brisu v'atar amra shafech dam adam ba'adam damo yishafech. So the brisa describes a scenario where someone is pursuing you and threatening your life. So what you have to say to the rodef, to the one who's pursuing, is, stop right there, don't go any further. The Torah says, shafech dam adam adam damo yishafech, that if you threaten somebody else's life, you yourself are going to be killed. Amar Torah hatzal dam shozeh b'dam shozeh. Now, in this brisa that we just learned together, was a warning issued? So it's funny, when I first read the Gemara, it's not the first time I'm reading the Gemara, nor is it the second time. But when I first read the Gemara, I thought, oh yeah, there's a warning here. But there isn't a warning, because a warning means that there has to be an acknowledgement of what was said to the person. Over here, there was no acknowledgement. Meaning, yes, the person was read his rights. Not his rights. But in other words, he was read a pasuk from the Torah. But that in of itself is not hasra'ah. Hasra'ah means that you are warned and you acknowledge that you've been warned. And that's not what happened over here. So says the Gemara. So clearly this brisa now is taking the position that you don't have to warn, and this is a support for Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, "Ayi Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehudi, detanya Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Omer, chaver in tzarech hasra lefish lo nitna hasra ela hafchem in shogeg lemezit." So the Gemara deflects, and the Gemara says, "Well, the author of the brisa could be Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, who we've already seen a number of times in our masechta. He does not require hasra if the person is a tamach chacham. Tamach chacham over here, by the way, mind you, we're talking about someone who's about to take somebody else's life. So I think the word tamach chacham is a little bit strong, but the idea is that he knows the halacha." And for somebody who knows the halacha, you don't have to give him a warning. The only purpose of a warning is so that we know that he knows the halacha. But here he does already. So we could say that the author of this brisa is Rav Yosef Rav Yehuda, and that's why no warning is necessary. But maybe in general, a warning is necessary. Tashma, the Gemara quotes.
When it comes to kill you, what do you mean? Wait a second, I can give you a warning first.
Yeah, right. That's what the Gemara...
That's what
the Gemara is entertaining.
You react and you kill him first, and then you give him a warning.
I hear you. Look, the conclusion is no warning is necessary. That's the Gemara's conclusion. But the Gemara is entertaining the idea that Hasra is necessary. Tashma, the Gemara quotes another brisa. So, Rodif Hashaya, Rodif Hachachavir Lahar Go Amalo. Reishi Yisrael Hu Ben Brisu, Vatorah Amro Shefech Dam Ha'adam Ba'adam Damo Yishafech. Now, so far this brisa is exactly like the previous brisa, but the brisa doesn't stop. The brisa goes on. Im Amar Yodeani Shu Kain Pater. If he says, I know, so he's going to be exempt. Now, again, this gets interesting. That's not a warning. Even though, think about what just happened. You told them, don't do it. You cited a pasuk in the Torah. He says, I know. That's not considered a warning. What is considered a formal warning? Al menas kein ani osa. He says, I'm doing so despite the fact that the Torah says not to. Now we have issued a formal and correct warning. A warning has to be where he acknowledges that he hears you, and moreover, he's telling you, I know the pasuk in the Torah, I know the Torah prohibits it, I'm doing it anyway. That's a warning. And under those circumstances, chayev, so then he's going to be chayev, he's going to be liable, which means now means that you have the right to take his life. So, in this brisa, it seems pretty clear the warning is necessary, and this goes against Rav Huna. And so the Gemara now is going to defend Rav Huna. Gemara says that this brisa is describing a scenario where the witnesses who are warning are on the other side of the river. Right now, they can't intercede. If they could currently intercede, they would do so, and there was no warning that would be necessary. But they're on the other side of the river, and they see the murder about to happen. So now they know we're not in a position where we can intercede. So here's what we'll do: we'll issue a formal warning. And if he accepts it and he kills despite the fact that we issued a warning, so then our next step is that we're going to take him to Beis Din. So what the Gemara now is saying in defense of Rav Huna is that this Bryce is talking about a case where the witnesses had no ability to intercede. My ika debayi yisula beidina, beidina bayasra. So now their only recourse now is to take him to Beis Din. But of course, if they're going to take him to Beis Din, now he needs a formal warning. Or says the Gemara that Rav Huna will say in his defense is, you know what, maybe this brisa is going against me. Fine, this brisa is going against me. But if you remember, just a little bit earlier, we had another brisa that clearly was supportive of Rav Huna's position, that no warning is necessary. Remember the brisa ended off earlier by saying, machtarasa zui asraso. That's once he's tunneling into the house, that serves as a warning, or better stated, no warning is necessary, and therefore you're allowed to kill him even without a warning. Okay, so that ends the Gemara's discussion regarding Rodef self-defense. The topic is going to come up again tomorrow, but for the time being, though, we're going to put the Rodef topic aside. And now, as we turn to today's daf in the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Gimel and Aleph, now we're discussing another halacha. Okay, let me give a quick introduction. So, are you allowed to kill somebody in anticipation of a crime? So we already know the answer to that is yes. Absolutely. And notably, Ritzicha. Somebody is clearly going to murder somebody else. He now qualifies as a Rodef. And now, in anticipation of the act of the crime, what you can do is you can intervene. And you can you can stop the crime before it happens. And if necessary, by doing that, it means you're going to be killing the Rodef, but you're allowed to do that. That we've already established, that we know. What we're going to be learning together now in this daf, and part of it's going to be indelicate, is that not only can you stop an Isser of Ritzicha, but you can also stop an Isser of Arayus. If an Isser of Arayus is going to occur, so you can stop that as well, even if it means that you can kill the perpetrator. Now, to be totally clear and honest, and this is now... This is total honesty, and when I say total honesty, meaning it's Torah, meaning it's this is a time to be totally honest, totally, okay. We are not talking about the stopping of a rape, meaning if a man is raping a woman and it's not arayus, and again we'll be very specific in just a moment, so you don't have the right to kill the individual in anticipation of that crime. It's a crime, meaning it's an issur in the Torah for a man to rape a woman, but it doesn't. If it doesn't hit the threshold of arayos, which we're going to clearly define in just a moment, so then you don't have the right to kill that individual. In other words, the consequences of which is that it is considered nezik, it's considered damages, and the Gemara in Ksuvos in the third paragraph discusses this extensively, but that's not what we're discussing right now. In other words, the justice, just an act of rape does not allow for the killing of the man. It has to be specifically a rayos, in which the man is about to do, in order to allow the killing of the person before the act is performed. And again, full honesty and full disclosure, if let's say you get there just a little bit too late, and the act has already been performed, even though it's a rayos, you no longer have a license to kill. Meaning your license to kill somebody is only in anticipation of the act, but not after the act has been performed. Okay? So I say all this by way of both introduction. The sources of all these halachas are coming up in today's daf, but I say that by all this by way of introduction. Elohim shematzil nosam b'nafshan. The Mishnah starts off by saying, you're allowed to save these people from themselves. What does that mean, save them from themselves? Rashi, the first Rashi on the Mishnah, min avera, meaning that they're going to commit an avera, which is either going to be murder or arayos, and the Torah under these two circumstances, and only these two circumstances, allows for a bystander to kill the person in order to save him from the avera. Now, you'll notice, by the way, that it's only these two averas. What are the common denominators of these averas? There is a victim. Meaning, it's not that just the person himself is going to be doing an avera, and a most serious avera, but there's also a victim involved as well. By Ritzicha, obviously, there's a victim in that someone is going to be killed. And by Arayos as well, there's also a victim, meaning the woman who is involved in it. And by the way, when we say woman, it could also mean man, because sodomy is also one of the Arayos, and the man is going to be sodomized, and obviously there's a victim there as well. So, in order for you to be able to anticipate and kill somebody, there has to be either Ritzicha or Arayos, and obviously there has to be a victim involved. Okay, that's Ritzicha, that's murder. V'achar Zachar, if a man is attempting to sodomize another man, V'achar Nara Marasa, or attempting to have relations with a married woman. However, if somebody was attempting to have relations with an animal, or violate Shabbos, or idolatry, you do not have the right to kill the person, even though by killing him, you're going to be stopping him from doing an avera. And not just any avera, by the way. Chilul Shabbos is a chiyuv misa. Avodah Zarah is a chiyuv misa. Right? Bestiality is a chiyuv misa. Meaning these are all chiyuvei misa. But again, it doesn't just qualify to hit the threshold of the allowance to kill him prior to the act. Rashi points out over here in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, really, what is to be excluded from this halacha? Really, kol haTorah kula. With just the exception of Ritzicha and Arayos. So it's a little bit interesting that the Mishnah chose these examples of bestiality, Chilul Shabbos, Avodah Zarah, when the truth of the matter is, all the other Yisurim of the Torah are really excluded from this halacha. But Raz Rashi points out over here in the Mishnah, but the Mishnah pinpointed these particular Averas to exclude because I might have thought otherwise. Look, bestiality. Bestiality is in the Parsha of Arayos. Chil Shabbos. Rashi points out, based on the Gemara, which we're going to see together, I could have made an argument that Chil Shabbos should also be included in this list, as is Avodah Zarah. Meaning, these are a serum that you may have considered should have made it into the very short list. They don't make it into the very short list. That's why the Mishnah points out these. But, okay, right. But the truth of the matter is that there really are only two Yisurim in the Torah that allows a bystander to kill the perpetrator, or he's not yet a perpetrator. He is a attempted perpetrator, so the Torah allows him to kill him, one being Ritzicha and the other one being Arayos. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Where's the source of Rodef? So the Gemara starts off with the pasuk of don't stand idly by and watch your brother's blood be spilled. So the Gemara says that pasuk has nothing to do with Rodef. That pasuk is teaching us another halacha, which is, if you see somebody's life is in jeopardy, you save that person's life. If you see somebody who is either drowning in the river, or being attacked by an animal, or being assaulted by robbers who are threatening his life, that you're obligated to save his life. The Gemara quotes the pasuk of Lo Samod. So it's not telling me that I have the right to kill somebody. That pasuk is just simply instructing me to save somebody else's life. In Echinam, the Gemara concedes. Point taken. So the Gemara now is trying to make a logical argument. When it comes to a married woman, where the Torah gives us the right to kill the perpetrator or the attempted perpetrator in order to save her, and her life is not in jeopardy, meaning she's going to be debased. And because she's an Ara Marasa, by the way, she's also going to be deflowered. But in other words, but her life is not in jeopardy. And yet the Torah allows me to kill him. And how do we know that? Stay tuned. We haven't seen the pasuk yet that told us that. But we will, right? Assurances. And so here comes now the logical argument, the Kavachomer. If I'm allowed to kill somebody for preventing arayos, so if I'm seeing somebody who's about to kill somebody, so certainly now I can intercede and kill the person before he kills somebody else. V'chi onshin min ha'din. Right, Danny, you've been around. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you can't do that. You can't punish somebody based on a logical argument. So the Gemara says, Debei Rebbe, Tana Hekeshahu. So the Gemara says, good. So it's not a Kavachomer. It's rather a Hekesh, meaning that there are two Pesukim placed side by side, or not even two Pesukim. Within the same Pesuk, two concepts are placed next to one another. That's called a Hekesh, and that is much stronger than a Kavachomer. Ein Meshivin Ala Hekesh. You don't ask questions on a Hekesh. When the Torah places two concepts side by side, they are there. They are put next to each other for a reason. The Gemara spells it out. When the Torah describes a man violating a married woman, the Torah says it's just like Ritzicha. What does that mean? It's just like Ritzicha. It's not just like Ritzicha. She's not going to die, as opposed to Ritzicha, where the victim is going to die. Me'atar is about lamed v'nimtza lamed. Now, you thought that the Torah was injecting Ritzicha into that parsha to teach me something about Nara Marasa. The Gemara says just the opposite. Make ish Ritzich Nara Marasa. Ma Nara Marasa nitan latzila b'nafsho. Af Ritzich nitan latzila b'nafsho. Just like by Nara Marasa. In order to prevent him from violating her, you're allowed to kill him. So too by Ritzicha, in order to prevent him killing another person, you're allowed to kill the perpetrator. Or the attempted perpetrator. V'nara marasa gufa minalan. It of course begs the question, which I told you was coming up, and that is, how do I know by the nara marasa I'm allowed to kill the attempted perpetrator? Kidetan de be Rabbi Shmuel, detan de be Rabbi Shmuel ve'im Moshi Allah, hayesh Moshi Allah b'chol davar she'achol la'oshia. The Torah, in describing the nara marasa, says, and no one was there to save her, which implies clearly that if somebody was there to save her, somebody not only can, but should save her, even if it means that I have to kill the perpetrator, I'll do so in order to prevent the Avera. Okay, so what do we have so far established? That there are two exceptions in the Torah where we, the bystander, are allowed to even take somebody's life in order to prevent an Avera. One is Ritzicha, the other one is Arayos. What about the pasuk of Lo Samod? That's coming to teach me a different halacha. Notably, I have to save somebody's life if somebody's life is in jeopardy. As long as we brought that up, the Gemara is going to go back to it for just a moment. Gufa. Minayin la'roas chaver shu tove b'naro chay gorasa olistim bayim alav shu chav latzilo tamalom lo samod adam reyecha. Going back to the statement of, I have to save somebody's life, we learn from the pasuk of Lo Samod, the Gemara says, is that the source where I have to save somebody's life? I thought, says the Gemara, we have another source. Not only do I have to return somebody's lost item, but if that lost item is his own body, I have to return it. How do I know? Because the pasuk says, I have to return him to him. If a person's about to lose his body, meaning his life, I have to return it to him. So that is another pasuk that tells me I have to save somebody's life if his life is in jeopardy. I now have two sources. Why do I need two sources in the Torah to tell me that I have to save somebody's life? If I only had the pasuk of Ashivos Olo, I might have thought, yeah, I got to save somebody's life. But that's if it doesn't cost me anything. But let's say somebody's drowning. I don't know how to swim. I now have to hire somebody in order to save his life. So I might have thought that there's no requirement to do so. So Kamash Malan, the second pasuk of Lo Samod is telling me, don't stand by, and as Rashi explains, meaning do whatever you need to do. If you physically yourself can't jump into the water, so hire somebody in order to jump in the water in order to save the individual. Okay. two interesting points, which I'll just raise very quickly. One, are you entitled to reimbursement? Meaning, you now save somebody's life, and as we just learned in the Gemara, it means even at an expense, even at a financial expense, I have to save somebody's life, and I have to pay somebody if required in order to save somebody's life.
I just different when you were carrying a jug with like oil and or wine, and you said they could empty his jar and to save the other person's oil, but you wouldn't get reimbursed for that. Remember?
Right. Okay. Now I'm with you. We're now on the same page, right? So, and there you don't get right. You don't get a reimbursement, right. And that was the Gemara's clear conclusion over there.
Right.
Okay. Let me think about that. Okay. Are you entitled to reimbursement? So see the Rush over here who argues that you should be entitled to reimbursement. The big question, which again, so many big questions today. The big question is that the Gemara says clearly that if you see somebody drowning, you have to jump in the river in order to save him. Does that mean that you should put your own life in jeopardy in order to save somebody else? Meaning, what if, let's say, you're not confident that you yourself are going to make it? So, do you need to put yourself in some sort of suffix sakana in order to save somebody else's life? How heroic do you need to be to save somebody else's life? Okay, so this is a big discussion, a big topic of discussion, and not only sheer in of itself, like this can go on for a week. Anyway, the Beis Yosef writes very clearly at the end of Choshen Mishpat that you have to put yourself in a suffix sakana, you have to be heroic to save somebody else's life. Because he for sure is going to die, you may only die, and given that the equation over here is his definite death and your only possible death, so you should put yourself at risk to save somebody else's life. Okay, and this statement of the Beis Yosef is highly debated and it's a really hot topic, and obviously this makes for a very interesting discussion. We're going on to the Gemara. That's what we do. But that's what we have to do. In other words, our objective is to finish the daf. Tana Rabbanan. Echad harodif acher chaver largo v'acher azacher v'acher naram aras v'acher chayv emisus beisdin v'acher chayv ekrisus matzil nosob nafsho. So this brisa over here is repeating what we already learned back in the Mishnah. It's going to be more details. That's why we're quoting the brisa. So if you see either a murder about to happen or you see a rios about to happen, so what you could do is that you can intervene, even if it means that you're going to be killing the perpetrator. However, if it's an act of bia, but it's not arayos, and when I say arayos, to state it clearly, it has to be either arayos of a capital crime nature, like let's say a father to a daughter, or let's say a married woman, or it's arayos of a kares nature, let's say a brother and a sister. So those are arayos which the Torah allows me to the bystander to go ahead and intercede, and even at the expense of having to kill the perpetrator or the attempted perpetrator. If, however, it's a prohibited act of relations, but only on the level of a lav, so then it doesn't make the cut, and you don't have the right to kill the perpetrator. Nevda ba'avera in masil naso benafsho. Next point, which I already previewed in the Mishnah, but here the Gemara says it straight out. If let's say you got there too late, and the act has already been committed, even though it was arayos, and even though it was chayvei krisus or chayvei misas beis din, you no longer have the right to kill the individual. Yesh la moshia in masil naso benafsha. If let's say you had another way of stopping the crime without having to kill the individual, so then you should do that. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer af al meretz nichalo shelo yargena. And Rabbi Yehuda's position is that if she says to the bystander, don't kill him, allow him to go ahead, so now you no longer have a right to kill him, and the Gemara is going to explain Rabbi Yehuda's position a little bit later on. Where are we right now in terms of the Braisa? Same place where we are in the Mishnah. You only have the right to kill somebody in anticipation of a rayus, only if it's either Kares or Mises Beis Din. Minan in the middle of the Gemara now wants to know, what is the source for this Amakra? Ulanara losasa davar, ein lanara chet mavis. So the pasuk says that for the Nara, you don't do anything. The Nara does not have a chet mavis, and the Gemara now is going to darshan every word. Na'ar zivzacha. You'll notice when the Torah writes the word Nara, it writes it without a hey. So in other words, it could be read as Nar. That's not the way we read it, but that's the ksiv. And we learn from there that even if it means that the man is about to violate another man, otherwise stated as sodomy. Na'ara zunara murasa. Now na'ara, which is the correct reading of the Torah, so that's a reference to a married woman. Chet eluchayve krisus, mavis eluchayve misus beizdin. And chet and mavis come to tell me that it has to be arayos of a serious nature, either capital crime or kares. Kol hanilam alitzrichi. The Gemara now notes every one of these four drushes are necessary. Because if the Torah just allowed for the killing of a sodomizer, an attempted sodomizer, that's unnatural. But when a man having relations with a woman, which is a more normal act of relations, I might have thought not. If a man is about to have relations with an Nara Marasa, so he's debasing her and he's deflowering her. And so therefore I might have thought that's where the Torah allows me to intercede. But if it's sodomy, where there's no deflowering, so maybe not. And if the Torah only gave me these two examples, I would have thought that I'm limited only to these two examples because in the case of sodomy, it's lav orche. In the case of Nara Marasa, she's about to be deflowered. But other arayos, maybe not. So karsav rachmana chet. That's why the Torah writes the third drasha of chet. The karsav rachmana chet have amina afilo chay v'lavin. And if the Torah would have just simply said chet, it would have been any act of relations that the Torah prohibits. Karsav rachmana maves. That's why the Torah writes maves, which means that no, it's not all prohibited relations. It's only prohibited relations that either is going to be Mises Beisdin or Chayvi Krisus. And if the Torah would have just written the word mavis, I might have thought that it's only relations that the Torah prohibits on a capital crime level. That's why the Torah writes chet. The Gemara now makes an exceedingly good point, which is, if the Torah would have just written chet and mavis, so we would have known that would have included all arayas that are either going to be Chayve Mises Beis Din or Kares. Now, sodomy, included. Nara Marasa, included. Sodomy is a capital crime. Nara Marasa is a capital crime. So they're already included. So then I don't need drushes for those two. And Achinami, the Gemara says, that's a good point. So why then does we have the Nara Nara? So interesting, we no longer view them as inclusionary terms, but rather exclusionary terms. One is to exclude Avodah Zarah. You see somebody who's about to commit idolatry, you don't have the right to kill the individual. You see somebody about to commit either bestiality or Shabbos, you don't have the right to kill the individual. Now, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says that this halacha of our Mishnah includes one more category, which is Avodah Zarah. You see somebody who is about to be Ovid Avodah Zarah, so in anticipation of the crime he's about to commit, you can kill him to save him from himself. Now, that's the Rashbi's opinion. Not an accepted opinion, but that's the Rashbi's opinion. So according to the Rashbi, what then are we going to do with both of these exclusions of Nar and Na'ara? Chalamut Be'em of Chalamut Shabbos. One's to exclude bestiality, and the other one's to exclude Chil Shabbos. Saka Dat Chemina. Tasty Shabbos Mechilo Chilo Me'avodas Kochavim. So I might have thought that there's a Gzeirah Shava linking Shabbos to Avodah Zarah. In both occasions, the Torah uses the word Chilo. And just like according to Rashbi, you can kill somebody before Avodah Zarah, so according to the Rashbi, you can kill somebody before Chil Shabbos. So that's why I need the two exclusions. To exclude both Mishka Behema and Chil Shabbos. Ula Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon Da'amar Mechalos HaShabbos Nitel HaTzil B'Nafsho Da'asya Shabbos Mechilo Chilo Me'avodas Kochav Ma'ikel HaMemar. Now the son of the Rashbi disagrees with his father, which we were just discussing this yesterday about a son disagreeing with his father's position. But okay,
he's going against the Mishnah of the Rashbi.
Okay, fine. He's a Tana. He has the right to do that. So, and Rabbi Lazar, the son of the Rashbi, he says that not only is Avodah Zarah included, but even Chilul Shabbos is included as well. And he learns it based on the Gzeirah Shavah. So now, according to Rabbi Lazar, son of the Rashbi, what then is the two exclusions coming to exclude? Chad miut lemute behema, v'idach aydid kasav rechman na'ar, kasav nami na'ara. So really, there's only one exclusion. It's only coming to exclude Mishka behema. And as far as na'ar na'ara, once you have one, the Torah includes the other as well. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afa Omer, Sinichalo Shalo Yeragen. Let's do one more piece of Gemara for today. And that is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda stated in the Braisa. If in the event that the Arayas has not yet occurred, but she says now to the bystander, don't kill him. Let him go forward. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you no longer have a right slash obligation to kill the attempted perpetrator. So the Gemara now wants to understand this position of Rabbi Yehuda. Now, obviously, the Tanna Kamma argues. And the Tanna Kamma's position is, it simply does not matter what she says in order to prevent him from violating the Issa Arayos, so you're allowed to kill the individual. So what is the Nekuda Machlokas between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda? Amarava ben Makperes al-Pigma u-Minichaso shalo yahagena. So Rava says that what is at issue over here is, what is providing the bystander the license to kill? Rabbanan Savre apigma kapa rechman v'are makperes apigma. So, according to the Tanna Kamma, it's the fact that she's going to be debased. Meaning, she is about to be violated. She is now, again, he's violating the Isser Arayos, and on top of that, there's a victim who's going to be debased. She's going to be demoralized. So, as a result of that, the Tanna Kamma says, that's it. That's the entire threshold that allows for the killing of the attempted perpetrator. And regardless of whether she says, let him go forward or don't let him go forward, Lamaisa, she will be nifgam. She will be debased, which allows for the killing of the perpetrator. And Rav Yehuda, hai dekam rachmana kalei, mishum demasra nafshala kitala. And Rav Yehuda says, no, that's not what is providing license to kill the perpetrator. What's providing license is the fact that there are women who are ready to sacrifice their life rather than being violated. And effectively, what you're doing now is you're saving her. But if you now know that she is not ready to, that she is not ready to give up her life, and you now know that she's going to go through with it, so you no longer have the right to kill the perpetrator. And halo masra nafshala katala, when she's verbalizing and articulating, she's saying to you, no, let him go forward. I'm not ready to give up my life. So now you no longer have the right to kill the individual.
So, him, though.
Right, right. Him. So again, so you're espousing the viewpoint of Tanna Kamma. That's the Tanna Kamma's viewpoint. Now, where Rav Yehuda gets this from, it's unclear. Meaning, the Gemara is explaining Rav Yehuda, but how does Rav Yehuda know this? I'm at a loss of explaining. But that's Rav Yehuda's shita. So Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye. I'm sorry. Amalei Rav Papa L'Abaye. Amanal Kohen Gadol Nami Kapagim La. So the Gemara says, you know. And Amana with the Kohen Gadol, he's debasing her, he's demoralizing her. So, and this question explains Rashi is going on the Tanna Kamma, meaning according to the Tanna Kamma, what is the license? What's the qualifier that allows a bystander to kill the perpetrator? The fact that he's debasing. So when a Kohen Gadol is having relations with an Amana, so it's an Isser and he's debasing her. So Amarle Apigma Rabba Kapit Rachmana Apigma Zutalo Kapit Rachmana. So the Gemara says we're going to create a spectrum of what is debasing. If a man is having an arayus relations, an arayus relationship, that's pigma rabba. That's considered a high level debasement. If it's just a manal kohen gadol, it's low level. Now, why? How do we make? I'm with you. How do we make these kinds of gradations? How are we grading? High level pigma, low level pigma. I turn to Rashi, and Rashi writes over here, pigma rabba, kigon. Arayus decreases. Shein chamurus v'avicher pasam ruba. Shehavlad mamzer. Oh, so Rashi's beautiful. In terms of qualifying why this is a high level pigam. Number one, if in fact they have a child, the child is a mamzer.
Hmm?
No. We're explaining now, that you're right in the Cohen case. But Rashi is explaining why is it by the Arayus case it's considered a high-level pagam. So in the Arayus case, it's high-level pagam because in the event that there's a child, the child's going to be a mamzer. On top of that, even if there is no child, this act of relations is going to, by definition, make her a zona, which will then be, which will prevent her and prohibit her from marrying a kohen. When the kohen has relations with the almana, so the child, the resulting child is not a mamzer. The resulting child is a chalala. She does not become a zona in this act. So therefore, it's that says Rashi is the reason why we can now grade. If it's arayus, it's pigam rabba. If it's pigma rabba. If it's just a lav, so it's a pigma zuta. It's not as high level the basement. Okay, I'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up on the bottom of the amud.